it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24/7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hello, everyone. This is Raise Your Voice as part of the Fans First Sports Network. I'm your host, Brett Rutherford, joined as always by my good friend and co-host, Darby Robinson. Darby, we are recording after a series victory. However, I'm glad we won the series. They got out of it. But I don't know if my overall feeling going into this next series and going into the next few weeks in April, if I'm feeling super great about this team. I'm not saying I'm feeling bad. I don't know if I'm feeling super great. What about you?
The Colorado series was something special. It was something weird. The vibes were all over the place. In that series, you have the Rays leading in the ninth inning in all three games. You have two fantastic late inning two out rally comebacks where they come back from five runs plus down in each. And yet it definitely has the vibe of like, oh God, I'm so glad that was over. And that's a weird thing to have, right? Yeah. 'Cause it feels like, man, massive late inning, eighth inning, ninth inning, come from behind, like, they tie it up. They take the lead. Yes. Like that should be like a bigger deal. And we'll talk about the big reason. I think the big reason why is that like most of those games, not all three, there are some really great things to like in all three of those games. But in all three of those games, there's also a lot of stuff that's like really disconcerting. And so it's still so early on. Early season is tough, right? Because if you gave us this stretch to start the season where they split against Toronto, they lose a close series against the Rangers, where they played pretty well against Texas, and then they win a series against Colorado, could have been a sweep, two outs away potentially from a sweep. You would be like, if that happened in July, you'd be like, yeah, that's a pretty good, solid run. Right now, we don't have enough data to know like what this team is. And so since it's so early, the negatives I do think tend to like almost bubble up more because you're like, is this just how good they are? Like, is it right. Like, is this how good the pitching is? Is this how good the bullpen is? Is this how good the hitting is? Like, why aren't the Rays hitting better against the worst pitching team in baseball so far in the season? Now they're in Colorado, which is the best offensive park in baseball. And like, the Rays were struggling to score runs until late in the game in all three of those games. Like they were not generating offense against pitchers who got lit up their first time through. And that can be sometimes unfair because some of those guys like Ryan Feltner have really good stuff. And one start where you get blown up and the next start you pitch well is not, that's not unheard of either, but you come in with these ERAs at like 10 right. or 11 plus for the Colorado Rockies pitchers, and they kind of shove you three games in a row. It makes you a little shaken. Yeah.
Before I kind of, because I've got more thoughts on just where the Rays are right now, but we are live on YouTube, youtube.com/@raiseyourvoice. We are live on X at @DRaysBay. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure you hit download or follow or subscribe so you get every new episode downloaded directly to your device. Make sure, if you're not already, subscribe, hit that like button, turn on those notifications on YouTube so you can join us every time we go live. And if you really want to say thank you, you can head on over to patreon.com/raiseyourvoice where you can become a member for as little as $1 a month. We would greatly appreciate that. But back to kind of where the Rays are through 10 games. Yes, it's an important caveat. It's an important thing to remember that our perceptions of this team will change several more times as the season goes on. And we know that going into every year. What you think about the team now, this time last year, the Rays had not lost a game. And they were eliminated quickly by those same Rangers in the first round of the postseason. So what you look like now is not definitely not what you'll look like at the end of the season, but probably not even throughout the rest of the season. But my fears are that this team looked, played like, and finished with a 500 record through 10 games. And I think early on, and I still am, and going into the season, I was very bullish on this team. You and I both. We had that whole episode with Jim where we thought they were going to overperform their projections again, overperform their Vegas win totals. Then as we got closer and the injury started to happen, I started to think, okay, maybe is this team trending towards being an around 500 team on the, you know, above 500 side where they do win 80 to 85 games and playoff spot is not guaranteed with that many wins. And it feels like that's what they played like. Again, still a lot of guys on the mend, still a lot of things to figure out. And I know we're going to go through each position group, but there's still a lot to like about this team and what we saw. So I think while those fears are still valid, if you're out there and you have them, I have the same ones, but that's why they play the games. We're going to get to see it play out. They're starting again here. If you're watching live in like 45 minutes, and we're going to see them take on the Angels. How are you feeling going into this Angels series, Darby?
I think I feel much better after the win against Colorado. Going into this road trip, I put it at 4-2 is a successful road trip. 5-1 is a great road trip. 3-3 or worse is pretty disappointing, right? Because the whole idea, I talked about it last week, right? You go 500 versus the good teams. You go about 700 against the bad teams. The Angels are a bad team. They're not as bad as the Rockies. The Rockies are very, very bad, but they're still good to like. It's very hard to sweep teams. So I'm not putting this as like they need a sweep, but a series win against the Angels, I think, is the expectations, right? That is the, if you're going to put a passing grade, a series win against the Angels on the road is the passing grade. If they do less than that, it doesn't mean that the season's over by any stretch, but it's a failing grade for this road trip, I think.
Right.
That's just my personal feeling on that. But I do think it's going to be a good matchup. It's an interesting matchup because you have two lefty-handed started pitchers going into the series, both of which, you know, Tyler Alexander actually had a pretty good first start. Patrick Sandoval had one pretty good start, one really bad start. His opening day start against Baltimore was not very pretty. And then Griffin Canning in game three. I think the Rays match up well when you have two lefties going, that gets them their best lineup, their best hitting lineup. The Angels are the second worst bullpen in baseball. And we can talk about the worst in a little bit, but the second worst bullpen in all of baseball are the Angels. And offensively, they have some standouts. They have actually been producing pretty well, but they still have Mike Trout. But they also have a lot of not producers.
Missing Reed Detmers here in this series, I think, is a huge win. Obviously, Reed Detmers threw a no-hitter against the Rays. But based on what he looked like last year and definitely by what he's looked like at the start of this year, it feels like this is the Reed Detmers breakout year where he finally puts it all together at the big league level. He was a highly regarded prospect. He has had success at the big league level. He's thrown just over 300 innings, already over 5 wins above replacement. And his first two starts absolutely nails. He went 5 innings against the Orioles, gave up 1 run, on March 31st, struck out 7, walked 3, and then in his last start against Boston, pitched 6 innings, only 1 earned run, 12 strikeouts, and 1 walk. So Reed Detmers, a guy who has no hit the Rays, I think avoiding him puts it pretty much in your favor. I think the key to winning these ball games in this series is have Mike Trout come up with nobody on base.
Mm-hmm.
And that will usually be a good start for you. He is still one of, I won't say like he right now is one of the is the best player, but he's definitely one of the best players. Other than that, this Angels team, nothing scary about it. This ballpark, unlike Colorado, nothing scary about it. I think a lot of that variance is toned down once you get out of Coors. And
yes,
we saw all of that wackiness firsthand this past weekend. A really good test for the Rays. Can you go out? Like, that's what differentiates. Like, a 500 team, you know, might lose or get swept here. A postseason battling team that is competing for a pennant usually wins this series. I want to go back to what you said a few moments ago about this could be a good discussion maybe to get into our lineup talk. You said that the Rays lineup versus left-handed pitching, where they've been rolling out 9 right-handed bats, is a stronger offensive lineup than their lineup against righties. I'm curious more on your thoughts on that.
I think in terms of the way the numbers go, you do feel a little bit more confident just because against right-handed pitching, the two elements that you do add that are really good against right-handed pitching are Brandon Lau, who is the best power hitter on the team. He is the most feared hitter on the team, as evident by how pitchers pitch this team. Like that, I don't care what your opinion is as a fan. The other pitchers are telling you they really do not want to give in to him, and they would rather face the next guy behind him. They would much rather face either Randy Arozarena or Isak Paredes than they do Brandon Lau. That's just how he's been pitched every time he's in the lineup. So with him out of the lineup, that is a big miss. Outside of that, though, like you really are missing Josh Lowe, huge, and even like Jonathan Aranda, because the next best left-handed hitter that you're getting in there is Ben Wortvedt, who has been awesome. Like he has been the best hitter on the team by statistics, and he had an amazing series in Colorado. Absolutely. I could sing his praises a lot. I think he's been.
Let's do it then. Let's talk about Ben Wortvedt.
Let's talk about Benny.
This was the. I'll pose a question, and that can kickstart our discussion. Game one, assuming health. Game one of whatever postseason series the Rays are playing in. If it's not a left-handed pitcher, who is starting that game behind the plate for the Rays?
I'm penciling in Ben Wortvedt right now.
Yeah. And the narrative has changed, right? Because it was just a few weeks ago in the Tampa Bay Times, there was an article about Rene Pinto catching 100 games, which is kind of seen as like this unheard of thing. Mike Zunino might have gotten close. Was it 2021? He had his really great season. He might have caught, but there were some DH games there too. But he was an all-star that year, right? Like the Rays don't give out 100 games behind the plate to someone who they don't think of as a potential all-star. And for that to be the storyline about Rene Pinto, now at the time, it's not like Ben Wortvedt, like they already had him in the system in camp. They had to go make a trade. So maybe that was their expectation before they made that trade.
True.
But now that he's here, it's feeling like he's catcher one. And while they're going to pretty much split time, it feels like he's catcher one and Pinto is becoming a clear catcher two.
I still don't know if I would say it's one and two yet. Because what I do see it, though, is I don't see Pinto getting 100 games. Again, barring injury, that's like the big asterisk. And that is the asterisk on this season, right? Because I feel like my elbow tendon is going to blow just by talking about baseball right now with the way things are going. So barring injury, whatnot, asterisks, all of that sort of stuff. I do think this is now a 50-50 split. Like, I think you are, and here's the thing. It's a 50-50 split, and they have been basically bouncing every other game. Wortvedt did get back-to-back games, and Pinto was pinch hit for and then finished off game three. So he played like 75% of the Colorado series and played it very well. I see the pinch hitting early for the catchers to be an interesting sign that Kevin Cash trusts both of these guys. I see it as this team says we are not having a big step down from either of these two. So nobody's going to get like overworked. We're not going to have somebody have to catch like three games in a row. We're going to get to be like, okay, you catch a game, take a day off. This next guy is going to catch. Then we're going to back and forth, keep them both fresh because it is a grinding position for the whole season. But you also have that ability to potentially in a close game pinch hit somebody from the bench and then have that other catcher come in and you feel comfortable behind the plate that that person can frame it. They can block, right. They can throw, they can defend really well. And I think that's something the Rays have not had in a while. I think you mentioned Mike Zunino. He did have 109 games during his all-star season. In 2020, he had 28 of the games, which is a clear majority out of the 60 game or 28 games at catcher of the 60 game season. So that's more of a split. I think you saw him being like your main guy because they didn't really trust Francisco Mejia behind the plate that well. They used him a lot because you needed to have that backup and you need to keep people fresh. But I think this team clearly never saw Mejia as a guy that they want behind the plate. And the bat never got good enough to justify the defensive shortcomings. I think with Wortvedt, he has been possibly better defensively. The framing numbers have been better so far for Wortvedt. His Fangraphs defensive rating is a little higher than Pinto. Pinto has been very solid behind the plate, but Wortvedt's been great. He's been great at controlling the runners. He had an amazing, amazing snipe of Nolan Jones, who is not easy to pick off. He got Nolan Jones caught stealing at second on a very good tag by Brandon Lau. So I honestly see this as a 50-50 split. And if Wortvedt keeps playing at the level he's playing, he could even earn more time. Now, the thing that is going in Wortvedt's favor is that he is a lefty. And if you are platooning these two, lefties get more starts because there's a lot more right-handers in baseball. So Pinto's going tonight against a lefty. He'll probably get back-to-back tomorrow against another left-hander. And then Wortvedt will be the last one. But I could still see this being a team that like pinch hits and uses both catchers quite liberally. And Wortvedt has been a very exciting find for the Rays.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's better for both of them, right? And to have like two guys that are primed for the role, if one does go down due to injury, the other one can absorb that playing time. I mean, if Pinto goes down, your obvious call up is Alex Jackson, where Wortvedt becomes the starting catcher and Alex Jackson maybe gets like every fifth or sixth day plus left-handed pitchers. Like that's a clear platoon.
And maybe not even every lefty. Yeah. Maybe not even every lefty. Yeah.
Yeah. But you know, he gets one, you know, he gets two starts a week. If there's a left-handed pitcher, he gets one start a week. If you know, you're facing mostly righties and you just need to give Wortvedt a day off. If Wortvedt were to go down, I mean, the call-up is probably still Alex Jackson. Like, Alex Jackson, I think you and I were both, like, I know you kind of want to see him in the big leagues, and I do too at some point.
I'm intrigued.
But we were both more happy with him being, like, your third catcher.
Yes.
If you could bring someone in, you know, clearly better, like Wortvedt. So it's impressive how quickly he's kind of carved out that role.
And here's the thing with Wortvedt that, like, I know some fans, Rays fans, are very tentative and they don't want to, like, believe, like, we've been waiting on, like, a great catcher forever. I think the thing that makes it, like, you're like, how does this guy come out of nowhere? Like, trade the last day of camp and now he's, like, you're, like, savior at catcher. The thing is, here's the thing with Wortvedt, like, the Yankees didn't just want to dump him, right? Like, it's similar to, like, almost the Joey Bart situation with, like, getting him in Pittsburgh is, like, these teams know how valuable catchers who can defend are. And they also know that catching, especially with high pedigree like that, it takes a long, long time to develop.
Doesn't it beg the question why the Yankees like wanted to get rid of him at all? Is it because Austin Wells is going to, like, you don't want to carry two left-handed hitting catchers?
You don't want to have, and here's the thing, is that like Austin Wells, he's not performed well so far, but those batted ball metrics are insane.
Yeah.
He is smashing the ball. And Trevino is like one of the best defensive catchers in the game right now. So I just don't think you want to catch, it's hard to justify carrying three catchers. Right. And Wells and Trevino are both like great. And so like it just made more sense for what the Yankees needed. Is they were running out of runway and they either had to carry a short bench basically or make this trade. The Giants did they had the same thing. And that's the thing with catchers. Right? It takes a long, long time. It takes a long time for development. We've talked about this so much. I mean, Pinto's been with the team since forever. Jonah Heim could not hit at all for years and bounced around to four teams before he really emerged and became this defensive standout for Texas. Like age 27, after being in, you know, the minors for years and really grinding and working and developing, that can be a prime breakout for a lot of catchers and has in the past. So Rortvedt, who was a very highly touted prospect, who was a highly touted prospect throughout the Twins system, the Yankees made a trade specifically for him, and he was a big part of that. He was touted with the Yankees. Like this is a guy who has had some injury problems, who has had some bad luck and has been a long road to this point. But like, it's not crazy that he is performing well. It's not crazy that he has made market improvements. It's not crazy at all. Like none of this stuff is like, this guy came out of nowhere. There's a lot to back up that this could be a legitimate break.
For Ben Rortvedt, I think he's already, I can tell, right? He's going to be the next Rays folk hero. There's like usually one new addition each year. And then like some elevate from folk hero status, like Ben Zobrist actually became like a known star. Yandy Diaz has become like a known star. He went from like our little secret to now everyone realizes, you know, you win a batting title and everyone realizes how good you are. And get named to an all-star team. But Ben Rortvedt like feels like that next Rays folk hero. I'm excited to see what he does in New York. I think there could be some narrative at play where he comes up in a big situation. The team that traded him on the eve of the season goes to a division rival.
Get a little lefty short porch action.
Oh, yeah. It's going to, you know, like remember the Travis d'Arnaud 3-home run game? That third home run was a wall scraper.
The easiest place
to hit a home run. I mean, this was a medium flyout, and all of a sudden, Travis d'Arnaud instantly becomes a Rays legend. That's how it happens. Mike Brasseau's home run was like first row. Didn't matter. That was still one of the best at bats I've ever seen. But yeah, Ben Rortvedt. I feel it. We love Ben Rortvedt. It's turning into the Ben Rortvedt episode, and I wonder how many times I can say Rortvedt before I drive myself crazy. Should we get into kind of diving into each position group?
Yeah. Yeah. So one of the things I want to mention before we jump into this is again, that caveat. It is very early. I do want to say this one little statistic that I brought up was I did it with 13 games because of last year's 13-0 start. But just to put it in perspective, the Rays are at 5-5 right now. This has been the start for the last 6 years, right? So in 2023, they won 13-0, very famously, finished the season 99 wins. 2022, they were 7-6 through the first 13 games, finished the season with 86 wins. In 2021, they started the season 5-8, ended the season with 100 wins. In 2020, the COVID-shortened year, they started the season 6-7, ended up with a 40-20 record. In 2019, they started the season 10-3, finished with 96 wins. In 2018, they started 3-10 and finished with 90 wins. So we just saw in that you can start hot and finish with a lot of wins. You can start slow and finish with a lot of wins. You can start hot and finish with only 86 wins. You can start hot or start slow and finish with 100. It's these first games have a way outsized mental and vibes standing, not so much a actual season long standing. And so with that, we thought we would have a little fun with our own vibes, our confidence index in various aspects of the Rays. So this is not saying this is season long, this is permanent, but this is what we're feeling right now, today, on these position groups.
Yeah, let's get into it. Who do you want to start with?
I think we got to start at the bottom. let's start with relief pitchers.
The bullpen.
The stable.
Can we call it the stable anymore?
It's the pig stable. It's the pig pen.
Yeah.
It's the arm barn. That's what it is. It's not the stable yet. It's just the arm barn.
So the bullpen. Okay. Uncharacteristic start to the season for them.
Say the least.
So we'll do this on a 1 to 5 scale. 1 being not worried at all, right? 5 being like DEFCON 5. We are things need to change and change fast. I'm gonna put the bullpen at a 4. And here's why. And I think we might share some of the same thought process here. And I'll say, guys, now I've been to a couple Durham Bulls games. I've missed a few, but I've seen some of the bullpen arms, and I think that's one of the strongest parts of that team, which means some of those names should be able to come up and replace some of the guys that I don't know if they will make it through the season with the Rays. I'm looking at Garrett Clevenger. I'm looking at Jacob Wagespack. I'm starting to look at Colin Poche. I don't want it to be true, but his role, I don't think he'll be a back end guy come the postseason. But definitely Clevenger and Wagespack. I mean, the Rays bullpen is walking a ton of batters. Mm-hmm. Some of the stuff that we got used to from these guys, including Clevenger, who's coming back from an injury, is just not quite the same. I'm worried about these 8 pitchers. Well, most of these 8 pitchers right now. I'm not worried about the pitching in the organization of the bullpen for the whole organization, but for the Rays right now, with these 8 names, I am at a 4 in my confidence index or my worrisome index, I guess we should say.
I guess this is the lack of confidence index in this case. No, I'll put it at a 5. I don't think it needs to I wouldn't say it needs to change right away, but like today, if you're going to the bullpen with a narrow lead, my confidence is non-existent in the bullpen. Now, I want to do a caveat here because I'm going to put it at a 5 because frankly, it deserves to be there. Right now, they have the lowest Fangraphs wins above replacement of any bullpen unit at -0.7.
Wow. And we've only played 10 games.
They have a full, almost a full win above replacement less. That is tied with Houston.
So
Houston
in theory
at negative.
In theory, right? Let's break down that WAR number. In theory, like if you replaced the entire bullpen with the 8 guys in Durham, they would be almost a win better.
You should be technically, you should be 6-4 right now.
With 8 AAA pitchers.
If they performed at league average, which is the hardest thing, right?
At replacement level. At replacement level.
Yeah, not league average, replacement level. Yes. So they are tied with
I think the Bulls pitchers are better than replacement level. That bullpen
should be.
Is better than the A's bullpen.
Well, the A's bullpen. How dare you besmirch the Oakland A's who are at +0.2. How dare you besmirch Sacramento's future major minor league team. So they are tied with -0.7 at the basement with the Houston Astros. So this is why I will say there's a heavy mound of salt? Because do we think the Houston Astros that freshly added Josh Hader with Brian Abreu and Ryan Pressly are going to still be the worst unit in pitching, who are just going to just blow save after save after save? No, probably not. So there is a bit of that where I'm like, I don't know if I buy these two teams at the very bottom, but they are also, but it is not, it is legit, right? So here's the numbers for the Rays bullpen right now. They are dead last in pitching war. They are dead last in expected FIP, fielding independent pitching. They are also dead last in regular FIP. So they've earned it. They've deserved to be bad, and they were bad. They're also dead last in ERA. Again, that's 7.47 ERA, a 6.18 FIP. That is horrendous numbers. They're second worst only to the Chicago White Sox in walks per nine. They are middle of the pack in K's. Like, this is so uncharacteristic, right? They're not striking out people. They're walking a ton. They're giving up hard contact, and it's all coming over to score. So, like, there's nothing you can say that's like, so far they have earned every inch of how bad they've been. Now, I do need to say that I have a lot of confidence in a lot of these people to perform better. But my biggest confidence level for the Rays bullpen is that if they don't, like, I actually think Colin Pochet pitched pretty well in Colorado. His first game, his velo was way down. He said afterwards that the mechanics were causing him issues, and that's why he lost the velo. The next time out, he was nails and had a lockdown ninth to get the save. And he was back up to 91. Pete Fairbanks had a disastrous blown save where he walked the world, couldn't find a strike. And that was all. And he said afterwards, the balls that they used from the humidor were all terrible, like bold caps, awful, horrendous. So I don't know what was going on in Colorado. Maton was terrible, but they didn't want to use him because he's a curveball pitcher. He throws 50% curveballs, and Colorado is the worst curveball stadium in the planet. Curves don't break. So there's a lot of things there where I'm like, I don't feel like I trust Pete Fairbanks to figure it out. I trust Phil Maton to figure it out. But like, if Jacob Wagisback can't, I don't care, because you know what? There will be somebody on the Durham shuttle. If Alexander can't do it, there'll be somebody else in the Durham shuttle. So my unconfidence, my worry index is at a 5. It has DEFCON 5, but long term, I am the most confident in the Rays getting this ship righted in the bullpen.
The other story I want to talk about with the bullpen is, and I wanted to just highlight this comment here, Kevin Kelly. I'm not opposed at this point. I wouldn't mind seeing a little Kevin Kelly on the Rays. But the closer, right, Pete Fairbanks, the leader of this group, the veteran on the contract extension, did he get put in timeout this weekend?
You know, it's hard to say with Colorado. I don't know what's going on there. He did come out and he had a really, really bad. It was very scary. After the Rays in game one came all the way back and they mounted an amazing comeback with Ben Roethlisberger, two outs. And I see the comment in there by Luke, by the way. Yeah, like, he did get drafted before Bo Bichette. So like this, like, that's how good he was. Like, this is a guy like Ben Roethlisberger, again, classic stuff. He comes up, gets a opposite field, two out, two RBI based single to tie the game, eventually comes around to hustle around to score the go-ahead run. But then Pete Fairbanks walks the world. And then Jason Adam tries to get out of it. The home run that Jason Adam gave up, and I actually will say, Jason Adam's been pitching very well. He's actually the one guy in the bullpen right now that when he comes in, I'm actually pretty confident in. You can cut this when tonight he gives up like a bomb to Mike Trout to lose the game. But he is the one guy that I think is actually pitching quite well. Like, his stuff is working.
Right.
But like, when you come in bases loaded, nobody out, like in Coors, like, I don't know, there's a lot of bad scenarios that come there. Pete was a disaster. Afterwards, he was as mad as I've ever heard him. I don't know. Maybe there was something there where they just, Kevin Cash and Kyle Snyder are very holistic. They know the personality side. They don't think this is just a computer's, that's not zeros and ones. So maybe you're right. Maybe there is like a bit of like, you know what, Pete is not in the right headspace in Coors right now. We don't want him coming out and feeling like the balls are bad. The balls are bad. I can't pitch. Like maybe there was something extra. Maybe there was something extra.
Yeah. I'm saying that. I'm not saying like he was sat down and suspended for his comments he made after the game about the balls being horrible. I do think it was more of like, this is not good for his confidence. And I think we can assume that Pete Fairbanks, everything we've heard from him, everything we know about him, is a highly intelligent person.
Yes.
He is, and I wonder at times if he overthinks things and when things, you know, aren't ideal, you know, I just hope he get to a place where he can make adjustments. And I think sometimes he gets so set into his process because his process is so good. And that's what makes him one of the best relievers, that when something isn't straightforward, like the baseballs at Coors, it kind of throws him off. But
and Coors is a weird place, man. Like you mentioned it, like, there was a pop fly that started where Isak Paredes at third was under it. Then Caballero was under it. Then Lau was under it. And Yandy ended up making the catch in foul territory. Like every one of the infield was like, it's under me. Nope, it's going this way. And the wind, you'll give up a weak fly ball and it'll sail out. Things happen. Things happen weird there. And it can shake even the most confident, like well-read, reasonable person. And I do think that maybe with Pete, who is somebody who, like, he seemed like genuinely like seeing red after that performance, more so than he normally would, that if he blew a save, that's like, you know, you don't want to blow a save, but like more so than that, he just seemed to be like absolutely ready to just like tear through a wall, and that may not be what you want coming out of the pen, and that could have been it. That could have been the reason why. We don't know. Nobody asked Kevin Cash that. Like, did he answer like why Pete Fairbanks wasn't? Not that Cash would say anything. He would be like, I just like the matchups better with the.
So Pete Fairbanks and I think Kevin Cash were quoted in the Tampa Bay Times. Let me pull it up so I don't misquote them, but Fairbanks did make it clear that it was not injury related, nor was it related to what he was feeling.
The Raynaud
in game one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I'll have to find it. But yeah, I mean, that part worries me, and I hope like he should pitch tonight, right? The Rays should, you know, even if it's like a 4 or 5 run lead, they might throw him just to get the work in, or they might give him another night's rest, the bullpen a little bit more taxed. But right now, I am worried. I don't know how long they can keep rolling out these same names. Should we go to the starting pitching next?
Sure. Let's go to that.
All right. Go ahead. Let me hear your thoughts on the starting pitching. How worried are you?
So on a scale of 1 being, you know, David Price and James Shields are back and they're in their Cy Young forms, I'm at a 2. Let's go with the 2. I'm just a little bit below that. The most, like, probably the most worried I was coming in to this season of any unit was the starting pitching, which had the most question marks to me, has been answered so far the best. Outside of fifth starter with Alexander and bullpen day, but like honestly, that I don't really care about because like everybody's fifth starter is kind of a disaster, and you kind of work around that. That's an injury base that'll eventually go to Taj or Shane Boz or whatever. The 4 guys that we came in expecting to be starters, I was nervous about Aaron Civale to see how he would step up. I was nervous about Zach Littell in a way to the, like, would he, is this all just magic pixie dust? Is that going to wear off? And Ryan Pepio, I thought he was great in the Dodgers, but like, you know, now outside of Dodgers with all this extra pressure put on him, how would he perform? Well, they've all performed spectacular. I mean, Littell has been amazing, just absolutely old school crushing it. Civale has been a revelation. Like, again, we talked about it after his first start. His second start, he is throwing strikes. He is throwing strikes. He is dancing curves. He is looking great. Eflin had a great bounce back. And Ryan Pepiot, my goodness, what a start in Coors. The first, I still can't believe the statistic, but he is the first opposing pitcher ever in Coors Field history to throw 10 plus strikeouts with zero walks. He had an 11K, three hit, zero walk, six inning masterpiece in Coors. Pepiot looked like, when he commands it, he is so filthy and so good. And I know Rockies batters are not the best. It's not the best lineup. They have some talented hitters in that lineup, though, and it is in Coors, so that is still impressive. He's only the third pitcher ever to do that and the first visiting opponent to do that. So I'm at a two. I'm squarely at a two. Very confident.
I'm going to put three. And the reason, the only reason that it's out of three is for external reasons. The injury bug. And this is always the case with starting pitching. But it's going around the league. There's more talk about, is this the pitch clock that's causing this? I tend to think it's not the pitch clock. The pitch clock might be one of a million reasons. It's not, I think you've talked about this. It's not just one thing about pitching. They're going to get hurt. But I guess I'm just getting a little bit worried that one of our shining stars that so far has done really well, Pepiot. I mean, man, a historic start.
Yeah,
of course. Doing stuff like that is that was the upside. We just saw it. Mm-hmm. Can he do it consistently? Is it going to take time to reach that next level and become that upside? Yes, it's not going to be perfect, but man, really special from what we saw there. Eflin, I think he's just going to be reliable, right? Like when he's healthy, he's reliable and he's really effective. And this is a much different makeup of this pitching staff than what we're used to when it's led by, you know, you go from, you know, Scott Kazmir and then eventually Chris Archer and Blake Snell and Tyler Glasnow. This was a rotation based on stuff and just mowing guys down. Now it's a little bit different. I think they're going to be able to work a little more efficiently, and that's pretty exciting. So I'm not worried about the pitching staff. I'm worried about all of them staying healthy, which is evergreen.
That is the name of the game right now, is whichever pitching staff can have just a healthy arm at the end of the season, maybe two, you're already ahead of everybody else. Okay.
Defense. Yeah. Defense. Let's move on to defense. I'll go ahead and start. I'll start with the defense. One. Truly one. And you look at when this lineup is your main lineup, you've got Jose Siri in center. A gold glove caliber outfielder, in my opinion. I don't know if he'll ever win a gold glove. I feel like he might like rack up too many errors. And I know gold gloves are trending more towards being like analytically driven and not, because it was one of the worst voted on awards in all of baseball.
Who made how it was determined. Four good catches, but also hit like 20 bombs.
Yeah. That was how you want a gold glove. But Jose Siri, maybe with like the new trends and analytics, would have a chance. And he's incredible. Jose Caballero, man, do I like watching him play. He brings such an awesome energy to the field. He's very good. And did you see the double play that Brandon Lau turned?
So good.
It prompted
game saving.
It prompted my tweet. Yeah, game saving. It prompted my tweet that the Rays have seen very few players that have put on that Rays uniform and have been better than Brandon Lau. I think, man, if he can just stay healthy, and I believe it, I believe he can, he could return back to that form in which he almost hit 40 home runs and had 100 RBI. So, and Luke saying, and that's arguably with arguably your best defender out, like. This team can get better in all aspects, but it can still get better defensively. I think they're really strong. And I think you're talking about Taylor Walls, and I am still believing in Taylor Walls' defense. I'm going to go one. I'm not worried. Just keep rolling it out. Keep platooning. There's never a guy out in the field where I'm like freaking out.
Yeah, I'm a one as well. Like I they haven't graded out super well by advanced metrics so far, but like the eye test wise, like they're making the plays. They're making really good plays. And I think a big element to this is also, and we mentioned it earlier, but like having both Rortvedt and Pinto behind the dish gives you that extra good element of like you have defense there. I have loved what I've seen from Caballero at shortstop. I think he has made some really good plays. He has been very, very smooth. Paredes at third has been really good. He's made some very good plays. He is probably more of like a average to above average third baseman long term, but he can make some spectacular plays when needed, and he has already made some really good plays so far this season. Randy has put in some good work in left field. It's not his, you know, he's not the strongest defender, but he can make some spectacular plays. Jose Siri is incredible. He will make some errors, but he will also make errors that you get to that he gets on to on a ball that nobody should ever have any right to be able to get under. He almost made a catch in center field. I think it was in game one. Just missed it. There's no human alive that should have been even within 5 feet of that ball. Like in Coors, which is a gigantic park, he covered such a huge amount of territory. And Yandy's been very solid at first. Like I've even liked what I've seen from like Rosario and Richie. Let's give a shout out to Richie Palacios, who has been a walk machine. We'll talk about that in the offensive side, but he made another game saving play catch in deep right center. He has been very strong in right field, filling in for Josh Lowe. Richie Palacios. I just think overall the team really doesn't have any like bad defenders. I think you have you have better defenders than others. Just overall, like I think you'll be more confident with Taylor Walls as your backup shortstop with Caballero than you will with Rosario. But Rosario's probably your worst defender right now. He got turned around a little bit in right field, but he's also made some pretty good plays too. He's athletic, and I don't know. I think this defense, I just don't think it's a negative. So I'm not really ever like worried they're going to lose a game. So that's, I'm also a one.
Yeah. I think there's no worries there. And still some potential to get guys back and have some more confident lineups and have some defensive replacements that you can use late in game as well. Cause we know Kevin Cash likes to do that. Let's talk about the offense. Everyone's favorite, right? I'll let you go first on this one.
I'll kick it off. Offensively, I think this team, I am at a three right now. There is a lot to like. There is still some concerns for me. And that's why I'm putting it right in the middle. I'm not on the worried scale. I definitely would like to see some guys get healthy and come back. I'm definitely not on the not worried scale. It has not performed as well as I'd hoped. But I think squarely at a three right now, because I think this team has shown some good signs. They just need to show it more consistently at the plate. So far, they have a lot of hitters that are hitting very, very well. You have Ben Rortvedt at 197 WRC+. Jose Siri is at a 152. He's been working some good walks. He had 5 walks in the Colorado series. Even bat flipped a walk, which you love to see. Isak Paredes has gotten back into form at 146. Richie Palacios at 138. Curtis Meade has been producing a bit too. He's actually had some pretty solid at bats at 121. And the guys that are not performing right now that are under 100 are guys like Ahmed Rosario, who's actually put in some of the best batted ball data. He's actually hit the ball really hard and has had some bad luck, but he should just keep hitting the ball hard. And then the other guys that are kind of struggling so far that have not gotten full into the term here are guys you expect to get improve, right? You have Brandon Lau is only at an 82 WRC+ right now. Randy Rosarena is at a 95. He has had some really rough looking at bats.
But he always does.
He always does. I believe that Randy and Lau are going to be fine. Harold Ramirez is also at the bottom. He has been the worst hitter so far by WRC+ at only 46. So,
and negative point. He's the only negative WAR player on the offensive side.
So when I look at the guys that could improve, right? You have like Pinto at a 73 WRC+. He'll improve a little bit. He's going to be like your 90 to 100 bat. Like, he's fine. But, like, you have produced okay,
maybe,
so far.
Maybe. We don't know that.
He's hit pretty well in the minors. I'd say 80 to 90 is maybe the floor. But I do think he can hit a little bit better. But I think the big things you're looking at, you don't really care about catching offense. I'm looking at Randy, I'm looking at Lau, and I'm looking at Harold Ramirez. 95, 82, and 46. Like that's where, like, if you can get those three guys to actually perform, now you can actually cook. I think those are the three guys that are really struggling for me. That's why I'm at a 3 and not like a 4 or a 5. Because I think those are the most likely to be able to be more productive. So I am happy to see like them come back. But I am really looking forward to seeing some lefties come in to maybe give Harold some time off against right-handed pitching. What are you at?
I want to mention Luke's comment here first about Curtis Meade. Curtis Meade, who is, you know, putting the ball in play, taking really good at-bats, not striking out a ton in his first, well, I mean, he's only had what, probably like 25, I got pulled up right here, 18 plate appearances. 18. But has looked good. And maybe a little worried about the power though, because of the wrist injury. And yes, I do think Curtis Meade, like without the power tool, does become not a Rays caliber player.
Right-handed Luis Arraez.
Luis Arraez. Like I don't even know if he's that. But maybe that'd be great. I think. I mean, you might take that. But
I don't think I do.
Prime Luis Arraez. Prime Luis Arraez, but I Curtis Meade, if he loses that power tool, I think you can question his future value. I'm gonna go with a 1. This might be a little shocking to you. I have seen everything that I need to see. Like this offense we knew had the potential to be good but not great. I go back to like you lost Wander Franco. That was your switch hitting, like that was supposed to be the best hitter in the American League, right? Like this, he had all the tools and he's gone, and that drastically changes your lineup. But I look at everyone else and I'm thinking, okay, this lineup still has the ability to be anywhere from like average to good, and not, you know, some outcomes would have them below average, but I think they're at least average and they're performing that way. I'm not worried about Randy Arozarena. He's always had ugly at-bats. And the biggest thing we mentioned going into the season is how reliable he is. He's been basically the same player for the last three seasons, and it's a good player. It's a good, solid, like above average, everyday starter, major league hitter. Maybe not always all-star caliber, but always above average. He's not going to platoon. He is going to play every single day. And now he's just a little bit below average, below the season. Still has 2 home runs, both to the opposite field. I think he has changed. I hope he hasn't changed his approach too much. Brandon Lau, I'm not worried about, and I don't think that's just me being in denial. I think he will be just fine. I've seen enough in a few at bats to be pretty confident.
He's also
his ability to continue to hit.
He's hit the ball really hard into some. Right into gloves too. He's had like at least 3 or 4 screamers that have been caught. So like those are good.
Yandy, I think, is trying to sell out a little bit more for power, and maybe he's not quite comfortable doing that yet. Striking out a little bit more. Has only hit the 1 home run. It was the leadoff home run on opening day. Mm-hmm. Facing a couple lefties this week. I kind of wonder if he gets one out in Anaheim. You know what? And then if you get Siri's running hot right now. It won't stay like that. He's got like a 412 BABIP. Ben Wortved's another guy with a super high BABIP right now, 462. Paredes doing what Paredes should do. Caballero looks decent. Like I'm not worried about these guys. And then you get Josh Lowe back, and I think it really deepens the lineup and strengthens your bench. I think a lot of times when I'm looking at a baseball team, and I say this probably specifically at the collegiate level, I always feel like some teams could be struggling and then they're like one batter away from like strengthening the bottom half of their lineup and pushing someone that really isn't a strong hitter to your bench, how much better that can make a lineup and make a team. So I think Josh Lowe might be that addition for the Rays. We talked about how high we were on him coming into the season. I'm really at a 1. And I'm confident going into this Angel series that they're going to hit the lefties and get a win in this series. I'm feeling pretty good about that, but we need, you know, the other places where I'm more worried about, like the bullpen, to step up.
So for both of us,
if they don't, that then
for both of us, the bullpen was the most that got the highest worries.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is fascinating.
And it's not just like, and it's not just the results. It's the way the result, like they're not throwing strikes. Yeah. They're not throwing strikes. And that is the Rays way. Mm-hmm. Get to strike two before you get to ball two. Get that first strike mm-hmm. fired in there. That's what the Rays will preach that on record. That's not their hidden secret. We will get pitchers who throw strikes. And so far this season, that has not happened. That is worrisome.
And that's the big thing, right? This offense can score enough runs to be able to win games. But the thing you have to avoid, like the Rays say, like, you know, pitch it over the middle. You're fine to do that because you get beat. It's a solo home run. And it's really hard to put up enough solo home runs to win games. But what you can't do is not throw it over the plate and then throw it over the plate for a three-run bomb. And that is exactly what they've been doing. Yeah, the walks are by far the most troubling thing. Whether they escape the outing, it doesn't matter. The process has been really bad. Like you want to see them, like if they were throwing strikes and they were just getting like unlucky by like just missing one pitch and it goes out of the park, that's different, right? I would feel much more confident that the good results will come. These walks, like that, you cannot be the worst unit in walks. Like that is the very much the definition of how you go from a good bullpen to a bad bullpen is just stop walking batters, stop giving up free bags, make them beat you rather than basically make it easy on them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it has not been good. The Rays, like by every FanGraphs metric, their relievers. Just
the worst,
walking a ton of batters, not doing very well. WHIP plus 144th worst in baseball. I don't even know how that's calculated.
whatever you want to look at, whatever angle, it's like that's the thing, too. It's not one of those things where it's like, well, okay, ERA is bad, but like, you know, ERA can be funky. It's like pick what you want, traditional to very advanced to extra deep advanced, like. It doesn't matter. It stinks. Like you want to look at the
eye test. It's a consensus.
You want to look at the eye test. It looks ugly. You want to look at the results. It looks ugly. You want to look at the expected batting. It looks ugly. Like it's like, oh man, that guy has a huge ERA. What happened there? Like, well, he got hit hard. It's like, well, you know, but like, what is it? Park adjusted? Yeah, he got hit hard on the moon everywhere. Put him in
for all the old.
Put him in Fords. Put him in the Polo Grounds. They still give him a bomb.
for all the old school people that think that Colin Poche, a lefty that throws a, you know, 90 mile an hour fastball up in the zone, that would be like, oh my gosh, that has to be the worst pitcher in baseball. They're right.
right now.
Yeah. They're watching this. I told you so. Years,
but now you are right. So enjoy. Yes. One other thing with the batters before we wrap up the show, Jonathan Aranda just today tweeted 1 week away praying hands emoji, which, you know, it probably sounds like he's doing better on his recovery. Sounds like that finger is feeling good. Whenever he is ready to get back to baseball activity, he will almost certainly have to go down to Durham to get some reps in, but hopefully not too far. And so getting Aranda back will be a nice little boost. He had such a strong spring and, I think the Rays are still very high on him. So I think Jonathan Aranda is somebody that like absolutely could get playing time again. If Harold Ramirez is still struggling, you can bench him against right-handed pitching and you can get Aranda in there until, Lowe gets back. And then if Aranda's hot, then you have both. Now you have an extra lefty in there. And then Harold Ramirez can still play against left-handed pitching, where he is historically one of the best hitters against left-handed pitching. I think you made such a good point. That one extra lefty, that one extra bat, that one extra piece could really change the entire lineup. Could really, really take this lineup from being average to above.
Yeah. So I agree. Like, we might be, maybe we'll do this again in the next, after the next 10 games, and we'll see where we've changed. Because yeah, I mean, it's very early. I'm excited to, maybe they're just about to start, or they already started. So we will wrap it up here as everybody wants to switch over to the game if you haven't already. But I've got a couple things I want to shout out. Maybe this can be a new, you know, segment in our show. Just things in the Rays internet sphere that I think you should check out if you haven't already. The first is an article in the Tampa Bay Times by Mark Topkin. It basically talks a lot about Austin Shenton and his story and his background getting to the major leagues. He went through a lot of adversity and is still going through adversity in his baseball journey. And pretty awesome that he's in the big leagues right now and seems like an all-around amazing person. And even though maybe we've been a little harsh on his baseball abilities early on, I can't say that I'm definitely rooting for the guy. And I hope he continues to do well. The other thing was a YouTube like web series. It's made by the creator Loopy Doopy. The first episode of Devil Ball: History of the Rays. Oh no, it's called History of the Rays. Part one is called Devil Ball. Was released 5 days ago on YouTube. He's got a part two out called Exorcism, and in the thumbnail, it's got Evan Longoria, so it looks like it will be the second chapter in the Rays history, as I like to call it. But basically, it's just a fun web docu-series, kind of documenting the history of the Rays franchise, and I highly recommend you check it out. I'm like halfway through part one, and I really enjoy it. Darby, we didn't pre-plan this, so I don't know if you have anything you want to share that you've seen, but if you do, I don't mean to put you on the spot.
Nothing right now, but I definitely have been enjoying some of the memes that Ray's Twitter have been coming up with, processing the emotions of a very interesting first 10 games. So I will say keep up the funny more than the
yes,
than the vitriolic, because it's too long of a season to be too angry, but never too early to poke some fun.
When people say that the Rays don't have fans, I'm like, clearly you're not on Twitter or X. Like the memes, especially when they're struggling, are top notch, and it's how we cope with the pain. But that's gonna do it for this week's episode of Raise Your Voice. Thank you guys for listening. Make sure, if you're not watching on YouTube, head on over to YouTube, like, subscribe, turn on those notifications so you can join us. You can see our beautiful mugs as we go live. Try to go live at least once a week. And you can find us wherever you get your podcast, but you want to make sure that you download, follow, subscribe, like, whatever it is, so that each new episode is downloaded directly to your device. If you really want to say thank you, you can head on over to patreon.com and become a member for as little as $1 a month. We've already started brainstorming some ideas for some exclusive content for our Patreon members, but we got to get a few more members in there. So patreon.com/raiseyourvoice if you really want to say thank you. And as always, make sure to head on over to draisebay.com to check out all of that great Rays content. Now that the season is well underway, we are through the beginning of the season. Most pitchers have made two starts. We're in our third trip through the rotation. Baseball is well underway. So once again, thank you guys for listening, and we will talk to you next week.